It's the Skinny Podcast, only on Local12.com. Now, here's Richard Skinner, joined by Chad Brendel of BearcatJournal.com and Rick Roaring from MusketeerReport.com.
And welcome into the podcast for this Monday, November the 21st. I'm Richard Skinner, Local12.com, digital sports columnist and editor. As you heard, joined by Rick Roaring from Musketeer Report and Chad Brendel from BearcatJournal.com. Fellas, we've had kind of a jumbled few shows because it seems like we've been talking about your team's playing as they're getting ready to play or on a day when they're getting ready to play. So finally we have a chance on a day we can just kind of decompress, look back at the weekend, hear about Chad's big-time trip where he big-timed the crap out of all of us, and we're gonna listen to that here in just a second. So we got a lot of stuff to cover. Before we do that, I have to start with it. I got to start with Friday night. You weren't here because you were on your big time, Mr. Big Time travel.
No, I left Saturday.
Oh, you did. So yes, right. You went to the football game.
See, that when you have the opportunity to fly private.
That's right. You can go when you want to go.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a good thing. We're going to touch on that here in a second. All right. After Friday, though, I know this is a basketball podcast, but it is a UC Xavier centric podcast, so that's going to include a little football for a second. Well, now, where do they go from here?
You got to fire him. I mean, it wasn't competitive. I told the people at UC, I said, look, I've got to get up early.
Got to be positive.
I got a flight. I got a flight in the morning. I'll come. If you guys are competitive, if it's a good game, I'll stay. The minute it goes off the rails, I'm out.
Got to be positive.
So at 10 to nothing, 4 minutes in, I was like,
I got to tell dadgum recruits.
I was like, well, I guess I'm probably going to be out. But I stuck it out until it was 20 to nothing. And at 20 to nothing, I grabbed my stuff and I hit the road.
You thinking that's how Muslim recruits?
What am I going to tell dadgum recruits?
I've never seen this happen in any football program before.
Never. Not at Ole Miss.
Program.
They never get mad at Ole Miss or Auburn.
Nope.
Heck, it darn fire. I mean, they just don't do it.
If the recruits saw me leave, they probably were upset.
Yep.
Yeah, probably.
Yep. I mean, it is. It's been cut and dried, it seems like, for a while. But the worst part, though, Chaz, is just continues to see. When you think it's gotten at its worst point, it takes another step.
Yeah. I mean, at least in most of these games, they were competitive in the first half, and it was, you know.
I mean, the Temple, if you look at the Temple game just at halftime,
yeah,
they're very much there.
Look at all of them.
And I mean, since then, it just feels like it's just going straight over the cliff.
Even in the game since Temple, at halftime, the offense was terrible, but they were still.
Yeah. BYU, the defense kept them in it for a while.
They were still within striking distance. The Memphis game, they come out and they throw an interception on the first series. Memphis takes it in for a touchdown. They throw an interception on the second series. Memphis gets field goal out of it. I mean, it just was like, you know, the snowball rolling downhill turned into an avalanche quickly on Friday night.
I think the fact of the matter is that there's just something about that new Chipotle barbecue sauce from Montgomery Inn.
I got to talk to my boys, Jim and Bob Jones, the Jones brothers, all the Jones boys. Got to talk to them all. Go get me a round of golf in today. Just warming up. All right, so there you go. Real quickly, though, it'd give people the important date if something does take place based on finances.
December 7th is when the buyout goes down $900,000, drops from 2.4 to 1.5.
And you can wait till then to make a decision. It doesn't have to be.
Although, if you haven't made up your mind yet, I don't know what you're waiting for.
No, I think you've made up your mind, but I think you, from a financial standpoint, you
my guess
is a prudent decision.
Holy Grail Banks already has a discount special set up for the Tommy Tuberville special. Fire Tommy Tuberville.
Somebody told me, and I was not there, but I heard people say that there was chance of We Want Kerry or Kerry Combs or something like that again. I heard it started.
I don't know that that's going to be a great situation.
I couldn't imagine that being a good idea.
How about ever. Charlie Strong?
My only problem with Charlie Strong is, do we know he's a good coach outside of having Teddy Bridgewater?
No, you're right. That's a legitimate point.
No, but you can't do better if you're UC at this point.
I would go young.
I would too. But I would too. But if you're looking for a name, Charlie Strong's the best name you can hope to attract.
We just went down that road.
Yeah,
and
you're
it
right.
Was a disaster.
I've said that since they hired Tommy Tuberville. It's the wrong way for them to go.
See, the only thing I'll tell you, when just the hiring itself took place, it did feel like, all right, why would this guy do this? But at the same time, just the name and the success. Well, he had had – if you look at his track record, the guy's a good football coach.
Yes, and it was at the point where after three coaches leaving
– you felt like you could get some stability.
You felt like that would be your chance to maybe stabilize. His wife was from the area.
With a name.
He wasn't going anywhere with a name guy.
Yep.
It felt like kind of the right thing, although I would say, you know who wanted that job? Hugh Jackson.
Did he really?
Yeah, because if you remember back at that time,
yeah, he was
unemployed.
Absolutely.
And Marvin hired him as a special assistant just to get him job.
Yeah, and then he actually went to the defensive side after that and then became offensive coordinator.
When Gruden left.
I mean, literally, they did. They gave him the title of a special assistant because they didn't have a job for him.
He wanted the UC job, and Whit Babcock didn't even interview him. He just hired Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah,
would things have been maybe if Hugh Jackson was there?
I don't know. I like Hugh personally a lot. I think I really enjoyed covering him. There's just some guys I just wonder, do they translate to college? He's a great talker.
Been in college.
I know
quite
he has.
A bit, though.
I know he has, but not as a head coach.
No.
And there is a big, big difference. But I would have thought he at least wanted an interview.
See, I think Hugh would recruit so well as a head coach.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a great talker.
Yeah,
there's
I think
no
he would
question.
Really recruit well.
I think he'd get moms and dads on his side. I mean, I think there's a lot of things there that are positive.
He'd have been gone by now, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
But I think it would have been, I mean, at least you go through the process and entertain the idea.
The way things are going in Cleveland, you might have a shot at Hugh Jackson. Who knows?
Just some football guys talking football right now.
That's exactly right.
Basketball podcast.
I know. I'm sorry. We just had to spin into.
It's a solid 6 minutes.
It's all right. It's a good start.
You know who I would say the leading candidate is right now, and if this happens, I might be on Rick's team here.
Uh-oh. Wow.
Not too far down the road. Jeff Brohm.
He's doing a good job.
Oh, he's coming to scout.com. I was going to say, there's no room on my team for Brendel.
And I don't even want to know about what teams you guys are on
either. I was wondering when he said that.
I'm just looking at both of them.
I was really interested to hear which team.
And I'm looking at you both cross-eyed. So.
Yeah, scout.com, I can see that.
Just making sure. Yeah. All right, we'll get back to your weekend in just a second, Chad. Let's start with Xavier from last night. There was some concern after the Missouri game because it just was not good. We talked about that on Friday. But really, a solid last two performances, and especially the second half last night for Xavier.
Yeah, and I took some flack from some non-Xavier people that listen to this podcast I was just, you know, because I said that Missouri game isn't something you worry about as a Xavier fan. It's one you sigh a breath of relief and
right.
say, okay, we got through it.
What we said was it was not a great win. It would have been a horrible loss.
Yeah, and what I said is if you're a Xavier fan, you're not worried because the thing that let you down is your strength. It's your best shooters not making shots and not being able to score. Everything else, you were able to gut out a win. And as it turned out, that's exactly what happened. The next game, they scored the ball better against Clemson, and they kind of controlled that game. I think, and again, then against Northern Iowa, they really didn't shoot the ball well again, but they were so good defensively and just tough and rebounded the ball well and did all the other things that, to me, if you're a Xavier fan, you're looking at this like, okay, this team hasn't figured it out yet. The chemistry isn't there on offense yet. They're not moving the ball. They're not shooting the ball that well yet.
7 assists last night and 24 buckets.
Right, and that's not how this offense played last year. It's not how they want to play. It's not how they're going to play when they hit their stride. All of those things being said, I think they're ahead of schedule if you're looking at them because I think you expected this team to have some more lumps on the defensive side as they were trying to figure things out, have some lumps in terms of just not – they're not the group of most physically tough guys and defensive-minded guys to begin with, so it's taken Chris some time in the past to get them on track in that regard. And this year, once again, similar to last year, they found ways to win these early games when they're not playing their best because they are being tough and they're playing well defensively. So to me, it looks like they're ahead of schedule.
For a team that doesn't get a lot from the post guys offensively on a consistent basis, the fact that they have shot some of the numbers they've shot from three. Now, granted, they are, you know, you've overmatched a couple of teams. But even last night, 5 of 20, if you'd told me 5 of 22 against Northern Iowa from three and getting next to nothing inside, I would have told you you lose easily. You don't just win by 8, you lose easily.
Especially if Northern Iowa was going to shoot it well, which they did.
Right.
And that's exactly what I would have thought, which is why, again, I think if you look at this team, you feel like they're probably ahead of schedule because they are defending so well. Malcolm Bernard is a guy that really hasn't been talked about enough in terms of Xavier's success, and it's because he's not putting up big numbers, he's not scoring a lot. But his perimeter defense, I mean, he's been guarding point guards. And then last night he was guarding Jeremy Morgan, who's a 6'6 wing shooter. He's guarding everything Xavier needs him to guard on the perimeter. And that's been a huge key for them.
Trayvon Blewett didn't shoot it. He's not shot it terrifically well. I've never thought of him as a great shooter. I know the stats will show that he's a pretty good shooter. Where's his struggle lie right now?
I mean, he's just missing threes, but I don't think he's struggling at all. I mean, he played really well yesterday in terms of his scoring in the mid-range and isolation, all the stuff that he normally does. He just, for whatever reason, isn't getting the three ball go down. But we know he's going to be a 37 to 40% three-point shooter. So that's not something that would really concern me about him at all. It's more of like, wow, you're able to keep doing this, and he's scoring 20 without hitting threes?
Right. Well, I'll ask this, though. The different load maybe that he has to carry on both ends and as a rebounder, does that start to take its toll on that part of his game a little bit?
No, because I
mean, or is it too small of a sample size?
Well, it's a too small of a sample size. If I'm a Xavier fan, I'm not worried at all about Trayvon Blewett shooting. That's just something that'll take care of itself. It's not even remotely a concern. Last year, he was one of their best rebounders. He played the four all season last year. He had to defend Henry Ellenson and all those guys last year at the four. So I don't think that's going to wear him out. He may see a few more minutes than he saw last year, but I mean, he's playing almost the whole game last year too. So
yeah, he played 40 minutes last night.
Right, and so it's maybe a couple more. He's not getting the breather that he occasionally got last year, but he got himself in great shape. He's down around 195 pounds now. He's built for this. To me, Trayvon Blewett is not a concern at all for Xavier. The bigger concern right now is Edmund Sumner, and not so much is Edmund Sumner going to be good, but it's like, hey, is Edmund Sumner going to mature at some point and see some of the improvements that you'd like to see out of your superstar player?
He was really good in the second half, though.
He's been great in terms of making plays and being the best player on the court at times. The issue is his maturity is the bad decisions that he showed last year are still coming up. I mean, two or three games during that tournament, Xavier was in those end-of-game scenarios where it's like, okay, put the game away. You're up by 7-10, and he turned the ball over right in that instance in the final minute or two. And it's like, you don't want that out of your point guard who's supposed to be an NBA guy.
And then how about the stretch down the stretch against Clemson? It seemed like they fouled every trip coming down the stretch and putting Clemson on the line.
The fouling was bizarre. And then in the second half of the game last night, they were fouling a ton too. It was like 14-4 at one point in terms of fouls. So some of that's on them being aggressive and playing tough defensively, but they have to find a way to tone that back and not foul, as we talked about on the last podcast, Chad. You're right. There's a way to defend without fouling. You can still defend well without fouling constantly. And to a certain extent, it's like, yeah, there's some calls going against you and things aren't going your way when it's 14-4, but a lot of those are fouls.
You got to correct it. You got to figure out a way to, you know, to stop putting yourself in the official's crosshairs. And that's the one thing that's been kind of interesting with X to me. As we've gotten to, you know, four or five games in or whatever it is, a lot of the elements are there, but there's a tough stretch out of conference games starting to come up for them. You got the fouling issue, and how has this team been so shaky on the free throw line? I mean, I guess some of that,
a big part of it's Edmund again.
Yeah.
Edmund, that's another part of the
thing. And that's the guy with the ball in his hand. I mean, I didn't see it last night, but I heard they were going more to Trey and JP.
And you're exactly right. That's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. That is another
part I'm here for.
The whole Edmund thing and his lack of maturity is you don't want to have to be saying at the end of games we're going to our wings because our point guard can't handle the ball and make free throws. And unfortunately, last night, that is what Xavier was doing. They were getting the ball to JP and Trayvon, which, understandably, because Miles Davis is your closer. He's the guy that last year, every time the game was on the line, you give the ball to him and send him to the free throw line because he's like a 90% free throw shooter. Now, your next two best free throw shooters are JP and Trey, so that makes sense. But it's a little bit of a concern.
It's a weird deal to say we're going away from our point guard.
Because he's the guy who can always get open.
Right,
can't guard him.
Right. When I was driving home from my private jet flight last night, I caught the last 2 minutes.
Hold on. You were driving home?
I got off the jet.
You didn't have a car service?
Yeah, I told him to take the rest of the night off.
Okay.
But, you know, it was exclusively inbounds to JP or inbounds to Trayvon. So it's kind of an interesting deal that, I mean, Mac obviously sees it. He knows, that's an issue for him. And his outside shooting is struggling, and he's struggling from the free throw line. And he can't take that next step
until he does
those two things. Because the teams, we've seen it a million times with guys in the college game, once that book is out on you, until you prove it wrong, they're going to play off. Now, he still has enough explosiveness to get by sometimes when teams play off.
Yep.
But when they start putting 5 feet in the paint
and having guys
waiting on him, he's going to become less effective. I mean, it's an issue right now, I think.
And he's already seen that. I mean, we saw in the first half of last night's game where they're just daring him to shoot that three, and a couple times it's like he's hesitant. He's like, I know I can go by this guy, but I can't find the opening or the gap to shoot through right now, so I'm just going to be hesitant and then shoot the step back three. And it's like, that's not what you want.
That's the worst decision of any of it.
It is. And so what he has to do,
because that's a three that's not really done with confidence.
Not at all. Yeah. And that's the issue for him. When he shoots it with confidence, it's fine. You're fine with him taking that shot. He's not always going to make it, but you're you're fine with him taking.
Right.
When he's shooting it because he has to, because he's uncomfortable and can't find a gap, that's when they need to be more patient and rotate through their offense once or twice. Because what you have is you still have two guys who can really stretch the floor in JP and Trey to where they're not going to be able to just sit 5 feet
Correct.
In the lane. They're going to have to cover them. So if you rotate the ball once or twice, you get it back to Ed like on the corner and he's able to ice
on
it.
On the run or through a mismatch of some kind that was created by movement. I mean, there's a lot of things. Yeah, you're right.
And that's what happened last night. Once they got the defense moving a little bit, then Edmund found some openings. He was able to get all the way to the rim, and they can't guard him.
I want to go back to what Chance said, though. At what stage do you let him play through? Look, last night, and one of the reasons why last night was important, we talked about it on Friday, is you know, this was the possible matchup with Northern Iowa, and then you have to play them again. You couldn't afford to lose to them on a neutral and then possibly lose to them at home. You need to do whatever it took to win last night to at least give you a game in hand when all is said and done. Look, if they come beat you at your place, kudos to them, and it just doesn't stick as bad as if you'd lost to them in both places. But what stage do you let him play through some of this?
Well, he's going to play through it no matter what because you don't have any options. I mean, you have one backup guard at period, and that's Quentin Gooden.
Right.
And he's not any more ready to handle that type of situation than Edmund. And so as Edmund will get to play through everything, the biggest thing is just like, hey, are you going to figure this out this year, or are you going to need another full year of college because you can't not make stupid turnovers and make free throws? And to be honest, Edmund's a great kid. He's totally committed. I don't think this is like a long-term
issue. He's one of my favorite guys to watch. Yeah, just the explosiveness is just silly.
And he's super smart. I mean, he's a guy you would almost universally root for. I don't think anyone has anything bad to say about the kid. So it's not something where you're like, oh, man, he may never get this. I think he certainly will. But for Xavier fans, it's like, hey, this is a real thing for where you want to go. You need that guy to be as good as you think he can be, and right now he's not. The one thing I did want to mention that you hit on with the Northern Iowa and the having to play them back to back, I think the way Xavier won this game, where they tied it up by halftime, they didn't have to keep making that run in the second half, they were able to take control and kind of cruise and just hold on. They were basically able to win it by just flowing in their offense.
Right.
They didn't have to go to a bunch of sets, which his hallmark is in the second half, if you need to win a game, he's got a bunch of sets he'll run at you and be able to get quick hitters for buckets. He didn't have to go to those in this one.
And show it.
Right. So now you still, if you're in a battle in the second half at the Cintas Center with the crowd behind you, you still have all those sets that they haven't seen yet, which is a great thing for Chris.
And we're again, you know, the wins at home are one thing, but you do have a neutral win over a really good team here. So that's a good neutral win when all said and done.
Yeah, I mean, the only team Xavier has left on two teams on their entire schedule, Eastern Washington and DePaul twice, are the only teams outside of the KenPom
right.
top 100 that they're going to play the rest of the year. And non-conference, Eastern Washington's the only team outside the top 100 that they've got.
Yeah, so. Right, but before we move on to Johnny Playboy here and his jet-setting ways, any other takeaways from the weekend for you, for Xavier? We'll get to the rest of it.
Not really. I mean, I think, again, it was just a really good weekend. It started out really sloppy and shaky, and you're worried after the Missouri win, and then you get through it all and you say, okay,
good weekend.
Probably ahead of schedule of where you had expected. Because when we were laying this out, we did the win-loss game, I had them losing a game here. And it was I thought they might lose that Clemson one. They didn't. So I think they're in really good shape.
All right, let's move on to Johnny Jet Setter here, who did get a chance to go to the Mohegan Sun.
What a great place.
What city is that again?
Uncasville, Connecticut.
Right. Uncasville.
Chad, there's Uncasville, a little glitter on your nose, I think, still there. You might not.
There's a dollar bill still stuck on your shoe.
She was very pleasant.
I'll bet. Tell us how the private jet came about.
Just a friend of the site had a spot and asked if I wanted to go up. And
wow.
I mean, when you hang with billionaires, you hang with billionaires, Skinny.
Champagne on the flight?
Billy.
Caviar?
No, there was
Skyline beer?
There were mimosas being had yesterday
mimosas.
For brunch.
Nice. Brunch.
Brunch.
He did brunch.
He's now a brunch guy.
He dropped the brunch on us, dude.
I did.
That's literally the third time he said brunch in his life.
Oh, my heavens.
So, it was pretty nice. It was a good event. It was a good time.
Very nice. Didn't have to go through security check or any of that stuff?
No. Straight onto the tarmac, right onto the jet.
I mean, they didn't look at you cross-eyed and go, wait a minute, you're on a list somewhere, dude. Hold on. Hold
TSA
flight.
Pre-check. You should tweet at Rothstein, private jet, life-changing.
You know, no, I got a little nervous last night because when we got to the airport, the team and the band and everybody was already there. And if you have over 30 people and you're on the plane, then TSA has to come in and check everyone. So I'm thinking, oh, man, this is probably going to get ugly.
Why? Why? What'd you have in your pocket?
I mean, nothing. But oh, okay. I mean, just like he said, just the facial recognition itself could have caused some issues.
What state were you in this weekend?
Connecticut.
Okay, I don't think.
That's one of the 10 states he's okay in.
We've never really traveled to Connecticut before.
Right, so he's safe in Connecticut.
But then because we were a small party on a small plane, they took us out to the tarmac, and we didn't have to go in through TSA. So
of course, big time.
Yeah. Made it out nice. All right.
That's a good weekend, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it's a whole different life when you hop on the plane, you're there in an hour and 40 minutes and don't have to deal with all the pain in the ass, you know, airport issues and right on to where you're going and on with your weekend and straight into the gym. And
off you went.
Off I went. It was a good time.
All right, let's talk about the first of the two games, the Rhode Island game, where UC played very well in the first half, had a lead, I think, as much as 12, maybe
12
14.
Yeah, 12 in the first and second half.
Yeah. What went well, and then we'll talk about what changed.
I think, one, they hit shots. I mean, that
it's a great equalizer.
Yeah, because that was the tale of each half. The Rhode Island struggled to hit shots. E.C. Matthews was 1 for 7 at halftime. And really, Jared Terrell was the one that kept them alive. So that was basically the difference in UC came out and hit shots early, built up a nice lead. They rode that for most of the first half. Jared Terrell hit a couple shots, got them back in it. UC pushed it back out. And at that point, it kind of looked like they were going to be okay, like they had withstood the run.
Right, right.
But they got to that last 15 minutes of the second half, and Rhode Island they hit 7 of their last 9 threes. And some of it was clearly Cincinnati's fault for leaving guys. You know, you can't let those two guys step in rhythm on knocking down shots because both of them are big enough and strong enough. They can hit them from NBA range. And that's what happened. And I thought Rhode Island... I thought UC took their foot off the gas a little bit, up 12 in the second half, thinking we withstood their run. We maybe got a chance to coast this one, you know, into victory and get Duke tomorrow. And Rhode Island punched him in the mouth a little bit, and I don't think UC responded well at all.
With that, you said they take their foot off the gas a little bit. Did you feel like, to me, when I was watching, I felt like the play calling changed a little bit for UC, where they went from kind of that free-flowing, where they were getting just good looks within their natural offense, and Kyle was really making shots, which helped, and obviously Jacob was doing what he does, to all of a sudden they became more of that grinded-out team that they were last year, where it's like they went to 1-4 some, tried to get Troy to the foul line, just tried to kind of slow things down.
He struggled in the second half shooting the ball.
And to me, it was just like, why are you changing what you're doing? You've been scoring well all game.
I think that was a result of the fact that they started taking some bad shots in the free-flowing offense.
And they just need to slow it down.
And they tried to slow it down and stop the bleeding a little bit. But at that point in time, I think Rhode Island had already decided we're going to become the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
They were really good. Rhode Island was awesome. Like I think it was 14-3. Cincinnati led on the glass early. And Rhode Island ended up winning the rebounding battle by 6. So some of it was, I think Rhode Island was taking terrible shots for a while, and the ball was just careening everywhere.
Right.
They happened to end up with it, and I think that built some momentum for them. And you have to give a lot of credit. I mean, here's the thing that concerns me about this game, Skinny. Going in, I felt Rhode Island was probably going to win. But I felt like if UC could, one, get Hassan Martin in foul trouble, and two, confuse E.C. Matthews a little bit with that matchup zone and get him off to a slow start, then it's a game that they should win.
They did both those things.
And Jarvis Garrett got hurt, the point guard, and missed the entire second half. And they still didn't win that game. So that's a little bit concerning for me. Cyril Langevin played great with Hassan Martin out. They did what they had to do to make things happen. Karan Iverson was pretty good, better than I expected him to be. And Rhode Island's got a really good roster. Danny Hurley's a great coach.
Did you get a chance to watch their game yesterday too? Then
yeah.
Obviously Duke is Duke, but
they didn't hit shots.
Yeah, yeah.
And it came down to second half; they just couldn't get shots to go in.
Was the takeaway from the UC side on your board and everything? Was it more of a that, you know, this is a frustrating, we should have won that game, or was it more of like, hey, that was a really good game between two good teams?
I think everybody, it was the frust. I think it's the carrot at the end of the rope is the frustrating part.
Which was Duke.
Which was Duke. Because if you get to Duke, your RPI change, your RPI profile changes drastically.
Dramatically, yeah.
For the entire season.
No doubt.
You know, Penn State, and I think Rick will agree with me on this, it's a very talented young team. But I don't know if they're going to be ready to win enough in the in a good Big Ten.
Right. I mean, they could be a good team and win five games in the Big Ten.
Right. You know, if they can get to six or seven Big Ten wins, they're going to be a top 100 team. But I don't know if they're ready for that yet.
Yeah, that's the issue I see with this weekend for UC is I was going to say that. I think I watched that Rhode Island game, and I was in the second half when it was kind of getting to that point where you said Rhode Island became the aggressor.
Yeah.
It was clear they were back in the game. It's like this one could go either way. I watched, and at that moment I said in my head, like, this looks like two top 20 teams to me. This doesn't look like two teams that, like, UC's given this away and they're not legit and Rhode Island's good. I was like, regardless of what happens from here, these two teams both look like they're good enough.
Just eyeball.
They look like tournament teams to me. Yeah. These look like two of the better teams I've watched this year. I think UC has definitely upgraded the offense, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast. But then you get after that game, you do lose it. And now UC, the takeaway from this weekend should be UC looked good. I think they've improved in a lot of ways they need to improve. I would feel really good as a fan. And yet the weekend really didn't do much for you in terms of your metrics.
In terms of your metrics, it did not. The one thing I'll give credit for is as much as you talk about that carrot being dangled, it would have been very easy to play horribly yesterday and then suffer. Instead of getting a win over a team that's probably not going to be above 500 when all said and done, because they're young,
right around 500.
But certainly not a team that's going to help your metrics very much.
Right.
Instead of falling on your face, you took care of business.
Yeah, and the interesting thing was they came out in that entire first half and played man.
Which we haven't seen really at all this year yet.
I mean, they did it a little bit against Bellarmine. They did it all against Bellarmine the whole game.
Was that a challenge or just a changeup?
I think it's a changeup in that they understand that I think the Rhode Island game made Mick realize that we need to have both.
How come?
I mean, they just lost their assignments in that Rhode Island game a couple times.
And there's nothing more frustrating than watching guys make shots.
Yeah.
When you feel like there's a way to stop it.
And I think with this team, this is
a hate zone.
Well, it's a zone, but it's not.
I know.
It's a whole different
but
animal.
But if you do lose an assignment, though, it allows guys to be more open than they would be if you play good man.
Absolutely. And I think this team can play good man because Kyle and Gary can move.
Right.
And Trey Scott off the bench can move. You can play good man.
Jacob's long.
I mean, Jacob is he does not get credit for this. The kid is an incredible defender and getting better daily.
Yeah.
I mean, they held around to 38%, for goodness sake.
Yeah. I talked to Danny Hurley for a long time after the game Saturday night, and he said that zone is so difficult. It's almost like you have to get lucky on, like, a rotation goes wrong. You almost have to get lucky to get a good look against that thing, or else you're going to have to do a lot of what they did,
which was
tough shots.
And then usually it's one and done, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Give those Rhode Island dudes some credit. They made
big-time
shots in the second half.
That's a good team.
And they're not great all the time, but what they have is some dudes. And those dudes made shots at the end of the game.
If you got Jared Terrell and EC Matthews on the wing,
you got a chance. It reminds me a lot of Xavier with Markin, too. When they
have
Mark Lines and two Holloway, where it's just like two dudes who do not care what you're going to do. At the end of the game, when they've got a
chance, they're going to beat you up.
They're going to try.
Yeah.
They might not be good enough, but they're going to give it everything they have, and they're not scared.
And I think they
I like that, too.
They might be a little better inside than the two of Martin.
Yeah, they're more talented.
Because Hassan Martin and Karan Iverson give them some very nice complimentary pieces. My takeaway from this weekend is there's an interesting dynamic developing that I didn't really – I should have foreseen it, but I didn't really factor in how it would play out. Right now, the way that this, you know, the first four games have gone, and we've seen them against some decent competition now, your two first-team unanimous selection all-conference guys are your third and fourth best players.
Yeah, they're not playing. I mean, Troy Copain is not playing great shooting
it's
basketball.
It's not that they're not playing great. It's that I think they're struggling to adjust to the fact that
there's others.
That Kyle and Jacob Evans are 1 and 1A. And, you know, Troy and Gary for 2 years, from the time Gary walked in the door and Troy became a sophomore, this team has been put on their shoulders.
Yeah, they were asked to be those guys.
And now I think it's in their personality more to be number 3 and 4, much more so than I think it's in Kyle and Jacob's personality to be 3 and 4. So I think ultimately it's a very good thing, and it's going to work out. But those two still have to figure out where exactly their spots are, where exactly they fit into being 3-4 instead of being 1-2. And part of that, I think, is a surprise because, I mean, I expected Kyle Washington to be pretty good.
Well, yeah, I was going to actually
touch on that. He's been a lot better.
Because we talked about him coming out of the preseason exhibition games and where he just couldn't find what he was supposed to do. But, boy, his numbers just, they jump off the page at you.
Well, he couldn't find
what he was scoring in on the glass.
He couldn't find what he was doing in those games because he was playing at the whole game at 22 feet.
Right.
And now he's doing so much stuff from 10 feet and in and then attacking from 18 feet into 5 feet. And that little lefty flip hook thing that he's
hard
got,
hard.
It's as I said, it's as unorthodox as anything I've ever seen. And he just flips that thing in there 90% of the time.
It's unlike – I've never seen a move like it. It's one of the hardest post moves I've ever seen because what he does is he catches 10 to 12 feet from the basket.
Which is way too far.
Works you into 10
right.
And then turns around and throws this wild-looking hook flip shot straight ahead at you. Now, the only thing I will say about that, what's going to be interesting is – he's not going to be hitting shots every game to where he's in that groove.
Right.
So when he gets when he hits that lull where he's not able to score, will he figure out that, hey, I may need to post up closer to the rim? Because he catches the ball so far out, what it does is it allows teams to double-team him easier.
Quickly, yeah, because then you can close back out on the kick-out.
And it's like when you're making that shot, you're making your other shots, great, it doesn't matter. But if you struggle, then all of a sudden they're able to take the ball out of your hands easier.
Well, that and he's going to have to learn to hit the rotation, because when he gets in that mode, he is not looking
to
pass.
Black hole.
Yeah. But that's fine because he's making shots.
But now he needs, when he figures that teams are coming at him, three guys are coming at him, you got
to
move it.
Absolutely.
And keep it moving.
But here's the issue again. If you're catching the ball 12 feet from the basket, the rotation isn't there because you didn't make them really help. They came 3 feet.
Took a step. Yeah, took a step and a step back.
If you're down on the block, they have to really come help, and now it opens up.
And then the rotations have to happen.
So that's what I'm saying. He's going to have to figure out when he has struggles that he has to get closer to the rim to catch the ball. Only thing. The other thing I would say is your point is an excellent one, and it's why if I'm a UC fan, I feel really good about this team right now because we talked about, I said before the year, I don't know, is Jacob Evans as good as you guys think he may be?
Yes.
Can Kyle Washington really score the way you think he can?
Both those have happened.
And I think that's clearly, I think at this point they played a couple good teams. It's been long enough. I think that's clear. They've upgraded two positions in a major way on the offensive end through Kyle's addition and Jacob's development. So now you do have two players who have been your stars. They're now your third and fourth options. And to me, I think what it's created is the same chemistry issues that Xavier's going through right now.
Yeah.
You just have some moving parts, some guys like Malcolm Bernard was the star at Florida A&M.
Right.
Now he's a role guy who's not really shooting. You know, just different things like that. JP's taking on a bigger role. It's the same thing UC's going through where they're kind of relying on their best guys to be good and make shots right now. And when they're not, they don't have the ball movement and chemistry that you'd like to see within their offense. But I think both those teams...
It comes and goes, right.
It's not something you worry about because that'll figure itself out if you're good, if your best players are good enough. And for both teams, they are.
And Skinny, I don't know how much you got to watch everything.
I just watched a little bit of the second half of Rhode Island.
But Jacob Evans, it's just effortless. I mean, it's unbelievable watching him how...
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. You could see that coming at the end of last year. And I think it was to Rick's point. You know, we've heard this. It's one of those ones. We kind of saw it. We need to see it to completely believe it. I mean, the guy has just been fantastic.
He is. He's really, really good.
It's so smooth. The ball comes out of his hands so easy. It never looks like I think maybe a little bit at the beginning of the Rhode Island game he pressed a little bit to get going, but once he saw it go through the net a couple times, it was just, I mean, 28 points in that game and carried them at times just effortlessly.
You know what I like about Jacob too is that he has more playmaking ability than I ever realized in terms of making his teammates better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's going to end up being a guy that can, like, kind of do it all and really get his teammates involved.
Well, and he's
going to,
because defenses are going to start running at him, too, a little bit.
He's a point guard. I mean, that's what people forget is he was a 6'1" point guard coming through high school up until his senior year when he got all the way up to 6'6", and they had to move him out to the wing. I mean, he has those point guard abilities.
And you're starting to see it come back out, whereas, like, last year, it's just like, dude, you're in the game for 10 minutes. Go get us some buckets. Like, whatever. You know, when you're on the court, go score. Do something. Now it's like he's starting to play out there. He's starting to get his feel back, and it's showing.
It's an interesting dynamic, too, when you have Justin, Jennifer, Troy, and Jacob on the floor because essentially – you're playing with three point guards. I mean, and two of them can put the ball in the bucket pretty consistently.
Let me ask you about the lineups, because I saw in the Rhode Island game something I really liked out of Mick, which was he went small when he went Jacob at the three and Jaren at the four, or vice versa. I'm not sure exactly.
Pretty much
what it was.
Jacob at the four, I think. But
okay, either but either or, way, right. Those two were kind of your three and four men, and then he just went with one big. I think it was Kyle at the time, but it could have been Gary, either one.
He went with Gary yesterday in that same situation.
See, I'm starting to wonder, do you just start going to that look almost exclusively? Now, honestly, you're going to play Kyle and Gary a ton together.
Yeah, together,
two
yeah.
of your five best players. So I get that.
And especially when you start getting against better competition, too.
But once you start hitting those rotations, I mean, Mick's proven he can make anyone defend. His teams are usually pretty tough and don't have any trouble on the boards. I'd really start considering, because their offense is really hard to guard when you get all those guys out
I there. Think the interesting point there is going to be the development of Trey Scott. Because if Trey Scott is a guy that can come in and back up 15 minutes, like we saw in the Penn State game, he got in double figures, had a really nice assist. He's a menace on the offensive glass. If he develops to the point where he can get in there for 10 to 12 minutes, I don't think you'll see that a ton. I think it'll be a changeup that you'll see, you know, in 2 minute spurts here, 2 minute spurts there to keep the defense, you know, off balance. If Trey doesn't get into that spot where he's comfortable with him, here's the thing, and we've talked about this with Gary Clark. I think Gary is the same guy at 27 minutes that he is at 38 minutes.
Yeah.
He's going to
put up. His production will be the same.
His production's going to be exactly the same. So you've got, you know, 13, 14 minutes at the four.
Where you can just keep him fresher.
Yeah. I mean, and whether it be playing the four guard lineup or whether it be with Trey Scott in there, I think you have to get him in the 27 to 29 minute range and get him away from that 35 minute range.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see which way they go in accomplishing that.
Right now, I think, to me, they looked clearly better. But I get you want to develop Trey Scott and see if he can figure it out, and this is the time to do that. So, great point.
Yeah, speaking of that, on the schedule this week, we'll talk about the Lipscomb game. That's Saturday. We'll talk about that a little bit more on Friday and kind of look back to, obviously, Wednesday's game against Samford. What can we expect out of that game, and maybe is it a time to tinker a little bit just to see some things?
I haven't really gotten a chance to look at Samford yet. I know we talked
about it. I'm talking more about just from UC's perspective.
I know they're not very good in the metrics. I don't think they're up in the 200s. So this should be a game that they should just come out and pound somebody.
Zach Tobler time?
Hey, nothing better than Tobler time. This should be – it'll be interesting to see if they continue to work on the man because I think this would – you know, obviously these next two games, if they've got some – over the next 20 days, they've got to go to Iowa State,
right,
to Butler. With the Rhode Island loss, I feel like they're in a position right now where if they're going to compete for a good seed,
you've got to do something
there. You've got to win.
Absolutely.
Either between those two games and the Xavier game, you have to win two out of three.
That's fair. Yep.
And I think you want both of these, honestly. Yeah, I think you want to go into conference having those two skins in your pocket.
Yeah, man.
It's tough.
Hilton.
That's a tough
ask. What Iowa State hang over the weekend?
130.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're starting four guys 6'4" and under.
I know.
I mean, you know.
I think that's a very winnable game, honestly,
I do
when
too.
You look at that matchup.
I mean, you know I'm the biggest Monte Morris fan on the planet. But I think that's a game that they've got a chance. And Butler, yeah, they've got the freshman kid that's playing pretty well for them. But this is not a vintage Butler team yet.
I'm not that impressed with Butler.
No, I haven't been either. I mean, so they almost have to win that one and then split Iowa State and Xavier.
Yep.
So, I mean, if you're going to continue to implement that man and be a team that can play both, I think you have to, you know, test it out and keep pushing it and get guys used to the rotations and the assignments that go with the man defense. I mean, Penn State had 10 points yesterday with 3 minutes left in the first half.
It's insane.
Against the man. So, I mean, you need to keep seeing that and getting better in that. And I don't know how much you've noticed it, Rick, but this team has been running a lot more than they've been running in the past, and I would like to see that continue and continue to see them push tempo and get some easy buckets because, again, a Mick Cronin coach team that's scoring in the 70s is going to win a lot of games.
And it's not nearly as much about, like, hey, they got to get out and get fast break points. It's their secondary break
right.
and the quick flow into their offense, and then you get two passes and a drive or a good shot. That's what years past would be like. Troy walks it up the court, and then you're just grinding through your offense, and it's like that's really tough.
Or even when he walked or when he would push it up the floor, he would get to half court and it would
and
be like a shot collar.
Yeah.
You know, this weekend he was getting to most of the time, he's getting to the 3-point line, getting that defense probing, getting it to react.
Yep.
So,
I think they've looked really good offensively. I was the Rhode Island game especially. I was really impressed. I was like, yeah, both of these teams are good. They're legit.
I will touch on Xavier's game against Northern Iowa again later in the week. We kind of recapped it, so they don't play until that point. So we'll talk about that a little bit more on Friday. I want to touch a couple other things. Kentucky winning last night over Duquesne, probably the new number one team in the country, and I don't know if that makes them the best team in the country, but based on the poll, they will be the new number one, right?
The ESPN Power Ranking has my Final Four pick in there at number one, the Hoosiers, who have looked One thing we learned.
I'll be honest. Your pick looks way better right now than I expected it to.
One thing we have learned about that team, or about a guy on that team that I'm not shocked to see playing a major role, Curtis Jones has never met a shot that he didn't want to take and convinced it was going in.
That dude has the neon green light no matter who's coaching him. Doesn't matter what you tell that kid, he's getting squeezes off.
I mean, and in his brain, every one of them is buckets.
Good look. Good look.
Every one of them is buckets. Skinny, this is a kid that we would see go one game he would be 6 for 7. And the next game he'd be 0 for 9.
Absolutely.
And he would let every one of them came out of his hand with more confidence than anything you've ever seen in your life.
For the record, Chad's listing his first quarter numbers. I never saw him only shoot 7 times in a game.
No, I had a kid on my AAU team, and he'd make his first two, and you go, just let him keep shooting. And when he missed his first one, it would almost be like, honestly, he's done for the day because you know where the rest of the day is going. He's gonna back up a step further, a step further, a step further until he realizes he's 0 for 7 and sitting by me.
Curtis Jones would be at NBA players camp with nothing but top 100 players around him, against him. On
just jacking
team,
it up.
And he'd be like crossover, spin move, behind the back, fade away, double covered three from NBA range with
bang.
Three guys under the rim. And like he didn't care if you made it or missed it. He was shooting it again the next time.
He's going to show his tour de force for sure.
And he has been big time for them.
Yeah,
like he has been a huge part of that.
He's not scared.
We knew that. We knew that 100%. And he's actually starting to play some point.
They need a point guard.
Yeah.
So
can somebody help me though? What in the hell is Maslow?
Huh?
That's who they played. Massachusetts Lowell, Maslow. Come on now.
You stumped me on that one. I had no idea where you were.
Well played, Skinny.
I was just trying to figure out what you guys were trying to do. Like, they have not exactly played.
I mean,
overall great yet.
No,
they
did. The Kansas game. And
yeah.
That
qualifies as
a decent win.
But it'll
ramp up for them.
I don't know if that makes them the number one team in the country power ranking-wise.
I've got Kentucky. I agree with you.
Right now it would be Kentucky. I just wanted to point out that Indiana was better than people thought.
Brendel's like, hey, I made a good point. Will someone please recognize that? And I think in this case, he probably deserves some recognition.
And for the record, James Blackman Jr. does help.
Yes.
He doesn't suck.
No, that's right.
They weren't better without their best player.
Who said that, by the way?
What all the Indiana fans?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah.
Like literally, every 98% of them thought they were better without James Blackman.
Yeah, no, they were better with Yogi Ferrell.
Yeah,
he's decent.
Yeah, he was okay. So, I do want to also touch on another local team from the weekend, Northern Kentucky University. Which
can I ask you a question about that first? Because you have a better perspective on all this and kind of the history and especially the small school stuff because you're into all that. Does NKU going up to Miami in their tournament, beating them on their own court. One, does it move the needle? And then two, did they just bury the entire Miami-Ohio basketball program forever?
That part is a possibility.
Dead.
You talk about irrelevant.
So you don't care. Like, it's not a big deal to you that NKU went up and won that?
It does. And it's a bigger deal to me that they actually played toe-to-toe with Illinois, no matter how bad Illinois really is. That moved the needle
agree.
A little bit more for me. I just – Miami, and I hate to say this for those that might be listening, they're just so irrelevant. They're just a complete non-factor. They're not a good team. I'll give them credit. I'm not sure this is a 6 or 7 win Miami team. I really don't. I don't know who the hell they beat in the MAC. I really don't.
And now for local kids, Northern's got
a better choice. It's a better choice than Miami.
They've got a better coach. They've got a better facility.
That's legit.
Probably a better league, or at least an equal league.
It's still.
I'd say they're very comparable.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But I will give them credit. I mean, they blew a big lead on Friday night against Austin Peay, and honestly, I thought, okay, you're going to go up there. It flies open. Let's go Peay. You know, that is their website, by the way. Let's go Peay.com. That's the best.
You got to embrace that.
Absolutely,
if you're
they
Austin
do.
Peay, I
they
mean, do. Got to embrace that
because of the Fly Williams days. The Fly is open. Let's go Peay. One of the greatest cheers of all time. No, and I thought that after they lost on Friday to Austin Peay, I thought, all right, it's going to be a lost weekend, and this is just – but they came back, and look, it's Delaware and Miami. It's not exactly going to make you go, wow. But it's a good start for them.
Yeah, but it's NKU.
Right.
that's right. Who do you want them to beat? You know,
they were D2 4 years ago, and
that's
now
right.
they're beating Miami and Delaware.
On their floor, beating yeah. Miami on their floor.
Right, and I agree with you that, like, to me it was like, who cares if you go up and beat Miami because they suck and you have better players, and to me that wasn't a shock. But I did, like, I was listening to the radio and just seeing some older people that were like,
it made me go, whoa.
And then, to me, it just thought, it's like, Miami's been in such a bad spot, and then exactly what you said, Jed, you're recruiting for the same kids.
Yeah.
And now NKU is already coming up and burying you on your home court with, like, before they're even there
with a
yet.
Better roster.
I mean, think about this.
They already have better kids.
6 years ago, would Drew McDonald and Carson Williams give Miami a look?
Yeah.
Probably, absolutely.
Yeah, and obviously those are two main front court guys for NKU. Yeah, that's true. They would have been playing for Charlie.
Charlie.
Oh, how is funny.
I don't want to say a bad word about that man because I love him as much as you do.
But it was too long. It was two years too long.
The reason they're in the situation they are.
I don't disagree. That's a shame because Charlie did a lot of good things there, but it was about 2 years too long.
Probably about four or five.
Maybe. I wish
my parents would have named me something like Cashmere. You know you're going to be successful in life. With a name like Cashmere.
Where are you from, sir?
Kentucky.
Oh, my Lord.
Can you believe that?
That's the greatest of all time. Go YouTube it if you don't know what the hell we're talking about.
I know the people want to talk to Chris Mack, baby, but they're going to listen to me for a few minutes first.
Have you ever heard of John Wall?
John Wall?
DeMarcus Cousins? I'm here and they got 5-6 NBA draft picks. And you want to know why we lost? Why don't you go ask John why they made it so close?
And that was the end. That was like, boom, the end. Still the best.
Oh, my God.
The only thing for NKU, and this is what is a little distressing, though, for them, is their home schedule is an abject embarrassment. It really – I mean, here's what's coming up. But if you're trying to make fans come watch you – and look, I'm not telling you you're getting a Big Ten and SEC, but you can do better than North Carolina Central, Eastern Illinois, and Brescia.
Well,
can you not?
So here's the thing.
No, not really.
Here's the thing.
You can't get Toledo. You can't get Ohio. You can't get.
You can't pay them.
You better find a way or you're not getting fans.
Here's the thing. For NKU, you have to figure out a couple things. It's
how many bye games?
Well, more importantly than that is, I'm just saying from a philosophy perspective, if you're trying to build a program, what's more important? Is it putting yourself in a position to win and be relevant and – you know, I mean, you're not really building a tournament resume because for NKU, you have to win with Horizon.
Absolutely.
That's your only chance.
So, no, I'm not asking to do that. I'm asking how do you move the needle from a fan? How do you get a fan who is a casual fan that doesn't mind watching Xavier and likes watching UC and certainly will watch Kentucky? How do you get them out of their chair on a Tuesday night and go to BB&T Arena?
Well, that was exactly my point. So it's like if you're not building a resume, then I think you do have to think about what you're talking about, Skinny, which is at NKU, you're not just – building in the – it's not Xavier or UC where you're just thinking we've got to win, we've got to build a tournament resume, we've got to put ourselves in the
position. And there's an art to the scheduling for both.
You have to think about we need to build excitement. We need to create interest and need to get people to realize we exist here in this marketplace. And you're right. So to do that, you do have to get better games. The issue is, like Chad said, no one is signing up for a home-and-home at NKU. No one is coming to play a one-off there. You can't buy people if you're NKU.
All right, so then I will go back to
what do you do?
I'll go back to one of my all-time things. Why go Division I then? Why waste the time?
They're in more money. They're in a good spot. Skinny. They're in a position.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
Skinny. How many more fans do you think are going to be there for Toledo than are going to be there for NC Central?
Negligible. I don't know.
50, the people that drove down from Toledo.
50? 100? Dude, unless you're bringing
in. So then how do you ever move the needle?
You win the horizon.
You win and you go to the NCAA tournament. That's going to be their answer. You're right. Oof. And you're right.
That's a tall task.
What you're saying
is right. You're building for it, but that's a tall task.
What you're saying is right. You have to find a way to create an interest.
Because guess what you become eventually if that's what
Miami.
You're Miami.
But what did Miami do for years?
They won a lot. They found success.
They got some games at Xavier. They've got some games at UC.
And that helped. They won a game or two. That's correct.
And that's what you start doing eventually is you get to the point where you can go and win a bye game and you surprise someone and then you get some name recognition. That's what you start doing. And NKU's just at the ground floor, but they're way ahead of schedule with the way John Brandon has recruited.
Oh, no. And I don't discount that. And again, I'm not trying to crap all over that win at Miami. I was one when I saw the score. I went, whoa. Oh, wow. Okay.
But this is the only relevant – I mean, this is the only fun conversation to have about this program right now because no one really cares if NKU's winning or not. So what you're talking about is very relevant to them. It's like, are they ever going to matter in this marketplace?
Because it's a tough marketplace.
And I don't know.
I think Miami's found itself buried because of pro sports, because of Xavier and UC. And I think NKU could find itself getting buried not only by pro sports and UC and Xavier in the market, but Kentucky as well. You're just in a
Well, NKU's
tough
already
spot.
Buried. They're trying to find out how to
unbury it. Yeah. Right.
But here's a slight difference.
Okay.
To go to a Miami game, you had to make that hour drive up there.
And it's a horrible hour drive, too.
And it's a bad venue.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only been in that place once. It is a dump. NKU, right there.
And a beautiful facility.
Not a bad seat to join. And a situation where you maybe come this time next year, you're showcasing yourself to 10,000 new people getting an eye on your arena 18 different times.
I hope that's the case. I do. I truly do.
I don't know if anybody can
change that. I got that. Do you think that'll happen? You see playing at NKU next year?
It's possible. I mean, what are your options? I mean, your options
it's
are downtown
it's
or
downtown
there.
Or there. Yeah. That's it. That's
and
what
and I'll be
to.
Quite frank. If I'm NKU or the people that run BB&T
Doing
Arena,
everything
I would
can.
Do anything I could for that. Now, the one thing I would say is you have and to play are. NKU here to do this. That would be part of the deal.
That's a great stipulation if you're NKU.
I mean, that would be part of it. Now, NKU doesn't really hold a lot of cards, though, with the arena. They're really just a tenant. Now, they're a main tenant, but they're just a tenant. But that would be one stipulation. Say, look, we're for this. You're cutting into my practice time. You're cutting into maybe how we want to schedule stuff, but if you can get us a game with them and we are the home team and we get the gate receipts or, you know, you cut a good deal. Yeah, you do a 2-for-1 that when UC open, maybe you play UC when it opens its new arena. Right. And for UC, it's an easy buy for them and it's an easy trip for everybody. It's a nice way to open the arena. In that regard, absolutely. And if I'm the BB&T Arena people, I'd do anything. And if I'm NKU, I'd do anything
to get
UC to play over there.
Yeah, where are you at on that?
You went over my head when you first said that, but yes, yeah, absolutely.
Last I heard was someone told me if they were putting odds, and a decision has to be made soon. I mean, we're getting to crunch time on this decision having to be made. If they were putting odds, they would say 55-45 that it's going to be at US Bank, and I or at BB&T
so
at NKU. And I overheard someone talking about it this weekend that said they think it's going to be at NKU.
What would be your preference, or do you think there's a better answer for UC? I think
NKU is the perfect
answer. And for those that are listening to this that maybe have not gone to that arena or gone to the facility, it's an extra 5-mile trip at the very most.
It's
not a hard trip.
And you don't
whatsoever.
Have to get up into Clifton and find
parking.
If you're on the east side, it's the greatest thing for you.
The ingress egress is not very good, but parking is there's enough, and I think it's a win for a lot of folks here. I really do.
I've thought for the longest time the right way to do it would be to do, if there's any 15,000 seat games,
then put those
at US Bank.
Absolutely.
Connecticut.
And maybe you gauge that.
Michigan, whatever. And then you put everything else.
Who has the home showdown game next year? I should know it off the top of my head.
Next year.
Okay.
It's at UC this year. Next year.
Okay.
So, and you put everything else at NKU, I think.
Is that an option for them? Or
I've heard it's been talked about, but I don't think the folks at US Bank are real.
Going to go for that?
Yeah.
It makes sense that they wouldn't.
Oh, I don't know. I still think you take whatever dates you can take. I don't think in this marketplace you turn down a chance to get 15,000 people in your venue just because
I agree.
You feel slighted.
I mean, I could be dead wrong. They feel slighted in that they wanted UC to play there.
Right.
And no one's ever accused the people who run US Bank of being the smartest business people.
Right.
So
I've heard that they had been making some concessions, but it wasn't enough to make up the ground on what, because if you go to US Bank, this is kind of an unexpected portion of the show today, but if you go to US Bank, like, parking is done by the city.
Right.
If you go to NKU, parking is handled by NKU.
Correct.
So there can be a split in that revenue.
Yep.
If you go to US Bank, you know, concessions are handled by
U.S. Bank.
Aramark. If you go to NKU, that a lot of their stuff is handled in-house. Yeah. They don't have some of the deals that are in place. So there's a lot of things.
Flexibility.
There's a lot of flexibility between what UC can do in terms of a deal with NKU that isn't even on the table with U.S. Bank because of the limitations that U.S. Bank has. I wouldn't be shocked if it ends up being U.S. Bank, but everything I'm hearing is that NKU is...
And part of the reason is you are the University of Cincinnati. And it would be very odd from an outsider's point of view to be playing
at Northern
UC
Kentucky.
Games in Northern Kentucky.
Well, the airport's here.
Exactly right.
I think that's the only relevant argument against NKU, though, is just like a branding thing. Otherwise, I think everything else makes sense to put it in NKU.
Well, are you going to play Lipscomb at U.S. Bank Arena with 6,000 people there?
Yeah, it'll look like a camp.
It'll be Millett Hall.
Yeah, it'll be awful, and there'll be just as many mice as there are humans.
Yeah, 6,000 in BB&T Arena, it feels full.
The bottom deck is full, and the upper deck is mostly full. And that place gets loud as hell.
It'll be like the ninth region tournament. It'll be a great atmosphere.
Yeah. Absolutely right.
That's so I've been gauged, my interest has been gauged on that topic a lot, and I don't think people are real happy with the fact that some people aren't real happy with the fact that I think that Northern is the right idea.
I think it's absolutely the right idea. I really do.
I mean, for Northern, can you imagine?
You got a bunch of new eyeballs. You got roughly 150,000 different eyeballs looking at that.
And I think there is a certain value in that, in the sense that you go to a game there for UC, you say, hell, that was a nice day. This is a good day. They've got good basketball here. Maybe I'll come back on a Saturday.
Absolutely.
I only live 15 minutes away or 5 minutes away or whatever.
Yep. Right.
Yep. All right. Lastly, any other final takeaways for you from the weekend? Just in general, Rick Brewing. You always got something on your mind.
I got a good one.
Go.
You want me to go first?
Yeah,
while you think about it?
Wait a minute. So you actually have other takeaways? You were not too buried in Mohegan Sun and on your private jet and all that?
It's related.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's related.
All right.
I know a lot of people think when Duke starts getting their stars back – That it's automatic that those guys are inserted. I'm going to say right now, and I said it on Twitter yesterday, right now Luke Kennard is better than Jason Tatum. And when Jason Tatum comes back, Jason Tatum needs to play behind Luke Kennard. Because Luke Kennard right now is carrying him and Emile Jefferson are carrying that Duke team. 27 points yesterday, and he was electric.
Just has such a range to his game. Yeah. Such a wide variety of things he can do to score.
He's better off the bounce.
I'll be honest, I regret not getting a chance to see him play in high school. I really do. I mean, he was in our backyard in Franklin. They sold out a lot of games. I really would have loved to have seen him play in person.
I know Rick's a big Jason Tatum guy, and I watched him a ton, and I like his game. I think he's got some flaws that he needs to develop as he goes forward. I think right now Luke is playing so well that it would be hard to take him off the floor.
Luke Kennard is playing really well. I don't disagree with that at all. I do not think he's better than Jason Tatum. I do not think there will be any issue with getting Jason Tatum back on the floor. I'm not saying that means you have to like change starting lineups or rotations or anything, but I think as soon as Jason Tatum is ready, he will take as many minutes as he can get, to be honest with you.
I can't see Luke off that. Luke's got to be on the floor 25-30 minutes. He has to.
Figure it out.
The funny thing is,
they pay Coach K big money. Figure it out.
The funny thing is, the guy that's not playing well, maybe he eats into Grayson Allen's minutes.
That's what I would rather do. Grayson Allen has not been good. Of course, he averaged, 25 a game or something last year. I know it's hard to exactly bench Grayson Allen.
But he hasn't had a good start to this year. He's really struggled, and it's been Luke and Emile Jefferson that have carried them.
What do you think about Michigan State right now?
Just too young right now.
Yeah, those who don't know, almost lost last night to Florida Gulf Coast. I think they had a shot to win it, did they not?
There was a huge clock operator error it was
officiating error, I believe people are saying it was. The official started the...
Well, Bo Borowski was involved, right? So I'm sure there was something going on there. But, yeah, no, I'm just wondering because we had – a lot of people had this Michigan State team so high.
I did. I didn't have them high early, but I still had them as a Final Four team eventually.
Do you guys feel like they're still a team that is around at the end of the year, or do you think that they're just not there this year?
It's Izzo. I feel like – and he's got – Miles Bridges is a star. We've talked about it.
He's unbelievable. Even when they're playing bad, he's putting up unbelievable highs.
So, I think they figure out a way – to get it,
And honestly, knowing his personality, this might be the best thing for them. Is he'll find a way to tinker, push buttons, get the most out of guys.
And then they'll win the Big Ten championship.
They won't win the regular season, but I can see him winning the tournament. Winning the tournament.
That would be classic.
and peaking at the right time, getting a four seed, yeah. and being that four seed that the one seed's going, what the hell, man? Why'd you put Michigan State in my bracket?
Exactly.
Jim Nance will be squirting under the desk come around tournament time about that storyline.
You're not a big Jim Nance guy, are you?
Oh, God.
You got anything?
That was it. I wanted to talk about Michigan State.
Just want to talk about Michigan State. That was it. Yeah. All right, boys, we'll be back on Friday, correct?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do that. Don't forget, Jed DeMusi and I do a Bengals podcast each and every week as well. You can get that on local12.com. Yeah. So we'll talk about another fabulous Bengals football game this past Sunday and look forward to another fabulous game.
Did you get hurt yesterday?
Yeah, I did. My pride was hurt.
You don't have any pride.
That's a good point. So you can't hurt that. That's a very good call. Man, what a day. What a day. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. You can catch it on the podcast there. For Chad Brendel and Rick Brewing, I'm Richard Skinner. Have yourselves a good week, and we'll talk to you on Friday.